good evening, and welcome to Monday. We're monitoring the time so that we get on right away. And that does make sense, Walden, doesn't it?
Ooh, John. That's pretty bad.
Yes, it is.
John Gashman, Walden Hughes, on a Monday night, June 12th, 2023. And for his 18th visit here on Yesterday USA, can you believe it? 18 years, the legendary Dennis Hart. Welcome back, Dennis.
Oh, brother, legendary, huh? 18, it does seem like just yesterday when we started doing these anniversary shows, but I am pleased to be here. And this is really a great night to do it because, as you know, it was June 12th, 1955, that Monitor first went on the air. Here we are, June 12th, 2023, and doggone it, we're still talking about it.
Hey, you want to introduce your sidekick here? Been with it for the last, what, 2 years, 3 years? You want to introduce our friend George here?
George and I have been together now for 3.5 years. George Miller out of Chicago, Illinois. George is the keeper of the Warren Gerby Monitor tapes that he discovered years ago. He is providing us with new audio every month. George Miller, welcome to your third annual Monitor Anniversary Show.
Thank you very, very much. I'm pleased to be here.
And if Dennis requested, let's give out the phone number now. So any of you who want to talk to Dennis or George, I mean, you can always talk to John and I the rest of the week, but, you know, you take the chance to talk to the expert to find out what they know at 714-545-2071. That's 714-545-2071. So, Dennis, it's been a year. You want to give us some updates on what you guys have been doing? What have you been shaking loose out of the archives? You want to sort of walk us through for the last 12 months or so what you guys have been releasing for the audience?
Sure. I'll do the preview here, and George can do the details on this. First of all, Monitor, of course, which debuted in 1955, was probably the greatest network radio show in American history. It spanned 40 hours every weekend off the top. And covered everything, news, sports, comedy, variety, remote pickups from around the world. It was Pat Weber's creation to save network radio, and save it he did, because Monitor almost single-handedly kept NBC radio on the air for 20 years. Network radio was dying because of the incursions of television, and Weber came up with this amazing format where he would have big-name hosts in this thing called Radio Central in Rockefeller Center, and throughout the weekend, they would go to a variety of topics. Every 3 or 4 minutes, something would change so that listeners did not have to tune in at the top of the hour or the bottom of the hour and fear that if they didn't, they would miss something. With Monitor, if you didn't like what you were listening to, it would change in every 3 or 4 minutes. It was a brilliant format that people thought would fail. Well, it was the most spectacular success in the history of network radio, an instant hit for NBC Radio. Lasted 20 years, as I say, big-name hosts, everything under the sun going on with Monitor. And it went off the air in 1975. We can talk about why later. I put up the website, monitorbeacon.net, monitorbeacon.net, in 2001. It's been up there now for 21 years. And in the beginning, we had very few bits of Monitor, 10 minutes here and there. We didn't even have enough capacity on the website because, remember, websites were brand new back in 2000. There was no capacity. So if I put up 10 minutes 1 month, I had to take it down to put up another 10 minutes the next month. Well, that finally got better. Of course it got better. But we put up all we had, and we had a great success off the top. Many people came to the website, a lot of folks, and it generated 2 books. Because so many people came to the website, including people who put Monitor on the air. And we wrote the books, and we settled in, and after 15 years, we were just about dead in the water in terms of not having the website, but having new material for the website, new audio. And then this man, George Miller, came into our lives. George Miller contacted our common friend, Louis Gestang, in Louisiana. And Louis contacted me, and George had this incredible story. He said that he had contacted a guy who somehow gotten all these tapes, and, you know, Louis and I were thinking, well, my goodness, you know, maybe he's got a couple of dozen hours, maybe a couple of dozen hours of monitor. That would really be great. Well, let's see, George. We've been doing this every month now for 54 months, 10 hours a month. We have put up 540 new hours of monitor in those 4.5 years, and you have just told me before we hit air, we have hundreds more hours. So, George, I'm going to turn this over to you. How did you get in touch with Warren Gerby? That was the monitor guy, not working for Monitor. He grew up in New York City, recorded Monitor off WNBC Radio. George, how did you get in touch with Warren Gerby?
It was through a fan magazine called Radio News or something like that. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it had a classified section in it. And I was a news junkie. I was looking for news broadcasts, and I remember that Monitor had embedded newscasts in it. So I put an ad out there, and what caught my eye was Warren Gerby, had a classified ad in the same fan magazine. So I, with his phone number, so I gave him a call, and I sent him a letter, and I told him, you know, I was interested, and he wasn't interested in selling anything from his collection. But unfortunately, not long after I called him, he had died. He died in the year 2000, and not about 6 months after he died, two of his friends, he was a school teacher in near Flushing, New York, math teacher. He only lived to be 55, and two of his friends were taking care of his estate, and they ran across the letter that I had written him, and they got in contact with me, telling me that they had all this treasure trove of recordings that he had made off the air with his microphone and his tape recorders, and they sold them to me. There was probably about maybe 500 to 600 reels of recordings that he made in their entirety for a span that went from, some of the recordings are as early as 1964, and it runs through pretty much the end of the run till about 1975, and you know, it runs a gamut of you know, excellent to mediocre to not so mediocre. And I've gleaned the cream of the crop for what I've passed along for, you know, posterity. And Barking Dogs included, which I excised through editing software. And, yeah, I think we're up to, like Dennis said, we're up to about 550 hours worth of material. And we're just about concluding the 1968 season, but I'm mopping up some recordings that precede that from 1967 and a little bit from 1968, but we're about to launch into the 1969 season. And there's about 39 reels of 1969 recordings, which represents pretty much the entirety of 1969, everything that Warren recorded. You got to remember, you know, on the weekends, on Saturdays, it was about 3 hours of Gene Rayburn, about 3 hours of Ed McMahon, and nighttime it was who was it, Mr. Steele? Yeah, Ted Steele, and then on the weekends it was Henry Morgan, and it was Mr. Crandall at the nighttime, and then it kind of like the torch got passed and. Coming years to other people along the wavelength, and yeah, up and coming is the 1969 season pretty soon.
So, George, explain exactly the condition of these tapes, because as you said, you may have had 500 to 600 reels, and to get this eventually onto the website, you have to listen to every one of those reels. Many of those reels, as you have discovered, are brittle. There's print through. It's unusable stuff. So talk about the process you go through to get it out here to the West.
Well, first I got to digitize it. I take the they were recorded at different speeds. They were recorded as low as 1 7/8 inches a second, and most of them, thank God, they were recorded at least at 3 3/4 inches a second, and a handful of them were 7.5 inches a second, which would have been my first choice, but who am I? But anyhow, I listen to them, I digitize them, and then once they're digitized, and I run them through a software package I've just recently got, which eliminates clicks and hisses, and it can, honest to God, it even has a mechanism in it where you can eliminate intermittent sounds that should not be there, such as barking dogs and honking horns and stuff like that, so it's all like one push button treatment for it. And then I can eliminate the hiss and any undesirable noises. And even when it's off speed, a lot of these things were off speed. I don't know what was happening with his recorder. Maybe it wasn't maintained well, but it's off speed in some of these reels. But I can compensate for that and reset it to its normal speed so it doesn't sound like Elvin and the Chipmunks. And once that's done, then I pass it on to Mr. Louis Casting in Louisiana, and he tweaks it a bit, and then he sends it off to our very own Dennis Hart in California, and he writes the liner notes and makes any further adjustments necessary.
Would you say, George, that for every hour that we get out here and put up on the website, how many hours would you say you are not putting up because they're not good enough to go on the website?
Well, years ago I did a quick listen through all of the recordings before I did anything with them, and I can't remember how many I had to discard because it just wasn't off. He recorded it from a station that was far away from, any listenability. It was just too full of static and, atmospherics and all that stuff. So I have no idea how many I had to discard, but I kept the cream of the crop. So what you're going to eventually hear is the best of the best that was in the collection.
So this is really an amazing story. Because think about this, Warren Gerby, who was born in 1945, he starts recording Monitor when he's about 20 years old from his parents' home. He keeps recording it. Now, many of us recorded Monitor as we were growing up, and, you get an hour here, an hour there, and then you toss it away, or you record over the top of it, because we always thought Monitor would go on forever, so we didn't have to keep any particular hour. Warren Gerby kept 500 or 600 reels of tape of Monitor. He is the single greatest collector of Monitor that we are aware of, and he is solely responsible for saving all of those hours that are now going up on the website. And I think that's an incredible story, and of course the tragedy is that he dies in 2000 at the age of 55, right before our website goes online, George, as you know, because if he hadn't passed away, maybe he would have been the one to create the website and put up all of his own tapes for us all to hear.
Not only that, but he lived in a cramped little apartment building with his parents in Flushing, New York, so the living conditions must have been pretty tight with all those 500-plus reels of tape all cramming for space in the apartment building.
He was more than a nerd. He was a teacher, and an excellent teacher, as everything we hear about him. It is tragic that he passed away. You have the tapes. You are the repository now. And there are just so many more to go. I want to emphasize to folks who are listening, and by the way, one of our listeners has just emailed me, Don Spieler out in Los Angeles, who says he may be listening for his 18th year as well, gentlemen. He's been here every year. He's our expert on KFI radio and its clearance or non-clearance of Monitor. Don, welcome. Anyway, think about this. Warren Gerby passes away. His tapes could have gone into the dumpster, but instead George gets them. This process we've been going through for 4.5 years, it's a real-time process. George has to listen real-time. There's no magic to listening to an hour of Monitor. It takes an hour of Monitor, an hour of time. And he's then editing and going through all of this. And then it's going to Louisiana, where Louis, who's an expert on Monitor, goes through it and looks for any tweaks. And then comes to me, and I do the same thing. I listen to it, and I'm the third editor of this doggone thing.
Not only that, but for each hour of raw material, it takes about twice as long to go through it and fix it up. So every minute takes 2 minutes to process it. So, every hour it takes 2 hours to get the final finished product.
So, George, why do you do this? Have you been doing this for 54 straight months?
Just a straight devotion, I guess, or sheer insanity, one of the two. Maybe it's there's a fine line between the two, they say, between genius and insanity. So some place in between there. But no, I used to listen to the show when I was in high school doing my weekend homework projects and all that stuff. So, early on I was familiar with it and fell in love with it early on. And, when I had a chance to, bring it back to life again, I leaped at the chance.
So an interesting thing here, it's also interesting, and we could talk about this for hours, and maybe we're going to, I'm not sure, but we got an initial push when the website first went up, thousands of people came in, but then when we did not have any more hours to put up, naturally, the attendance dropped because we didn't have anything new to offer, essentially. And then George came into our lives with these new hours of Monitor, and we put out the word that something's happening here and come back every month. We decided we were going to do 10 a month because it would kill us to do any more than that because we actually all have lives. And since then, it is incredible to me. We have about 2,500 visits a month now. We have 30,000 visits a year. At the first of the month when we put them up, and we put up the new hours right on the first of the month, you can see a jump on the website, the number of visits. People have come to learn. New Monitor will be here. Now, think about this. This is a show that has been off the air, nearly 50 years, and there's still this hunger. I still get letters from people. We get hits on the website. People fell in love with this show, and they still do to this day. I know of no other OTR website for a single show, that gets that much interest. It's amazing, George.
That's right. If I can just jump in here to our listening audience, if anybody out there in Radio Land should have maybe recorded any Monitor broadcasts, please get in touch with us. I'll get a hold of you, and if you can send me your tapes, I'll return them, and I will give you a copy of the cleaned-up version, and we'll post it on our site.
Well, George, you're asking for more trouble because you've already got hundreds still to go, but go ahead. Yes, contact us. Monitorbeacon.net is the website, and you can reach us there through that website. But Monitor was a unique thing for a generation of people growing up in the 1950s through the 70s, and that's me, and that's George, and that's Lewis in Louisiana, and that's Don Spieler in Los Angeles who's listening right now. Monitor became a weekend habit. It was a way of life. And I know for me, it influenced me so dramatically. It led me to go into broadcasting because I wanted to be on Monitor or produce Monitor, and I never made it because it passed away before I could get there. But I loved Monitor. Every weekend I would tune in and hear big-name hosts, Rayburn, McMahon, Crandall, Henry Morgan, Dave Garraway, name them. They were there. And Monitor would take you everywhere around the world in the course of an hour or 2 hours or an afternoon. It was the most interesting and educational thing and entertaining. It covered everything interesting, entertaining, informative in the weekend world. It really lived up to that. Their slogan was going places and doing things. And George, it has brought back so many memories, your hours that you've given to us, the delight that I had. And I actually remember some of those hours, some of those incidents, particularly, of course, the one in Robert F. Kennedy's post-assassination.
Oh, yes, that was kind of sad to listen to again.
That is a historical document because Joe Garagiola is hosting Saturday Afternoon Monitor as RFK's funeral train is being brought down to Arlington Cemetery after service in New York City, and the train keeps getting delayed because there are hundreds of thousands and millions of people along the tracks wanting to reach out. The nation is just in this grief-stricken state, and Garagiola is covering this, and Monitor is covering this live, and you hear it in their voices as they toss to this report, and sometimes things go wrong and it's not there, but the grief in Garagiola's voice as he hosts this thing. To this day, I remember crying when I initially heard it in 68, and when I heard it again, when you sent it to us last year, I cried again. It was that sad.
Right. Not only that, a few weeks prior to that, a couple of months prior to that, LBJ made his announcement that he would not be running for president again, and at the end of the speech, and the local announcers, and I think, I can't remember who it was, if it was Joe Garagiola. But, they switched it back after the ending of his speech, and these people in the broadcast booth were so totally prepared for what was about, what they had just heard. They were like Ralph Cramden. They were all going, hum, hum, hum. You know, they didn't know what to say. They were so caught off guard.
What we're suggesting is that on this website, monitorbeacon.net, you have some truly historic broadcasts that historians of the future, if they're looking back to what our culture was like, our history was like, you can do a lot worse than going to this website and hearing NBC Monitor News on the hour, on many of those hours.
Yes.
Listening going on in this country. Those Monitor newscasts, by the way, George, when they talk about the Middle East, because we have the 67 12-day war, was it 7-day? 7-day war.
Right.
With Israel. And those newscasts could be as prescient as today because nothing ever changes in the Middle East. It's shocking. You can hear 65 years ago stuff you could be hearing
it's still
today.
The same, right.
And that's the power of this broadcast, because Monitor covered everything that was going on in the weekend world, good, bad, indifferent. It was highly entertaining. It was highly educational. I grew so much. I learned so much. But honestly, this website, and with the hours you just mentioned, though, the night LBJ said he wasn't going to run again in 68, the weekend after RFK, many more. This website now has really historic and entertaining stuff, and I'm very proud of it, George. And if you are largely to blame for all this, in other words, to pray, you're bringing those hours to bear to us, and who knows what we have ahead. I mean, we know what's going to happen. It's fun to
listen to it again. You know what's going to play out, but it's real nice to and entertaining and interesting to hear it again. It kind of jogs your memory circuits.
And, you know, you can tell a real difference between Monitor in 1967, which I think is my favorite year for a variety of reasons. They included some new jingles for the first time. They updated the music format. The hosts were at the top of the game at this point. But 67 was the last year. The last year before, well, the country went into the dumper, shall we say, in 1968. We had MLK assassinated. We had RFK assassinated. We had the Chicago Democratic National Convention riots. We had riots in the cities. Things went into the toilet in 1968, and Monitor reflects it, and I can hear it in the announcers, and I can hear it in the presentation of the show.
Yeah, it was a wild year. In addition to that, not only did you have the regular announcers like Gene Rayburn, Ed McMahon, and you know, the rest, but you also had, on occasion, you had some fill-in you know, hosts like Sammy Davis, Van Johnson, Jim Backus, Gary Moore, Durwood Kirby come along and fill in for the regulars. And there's many, many more, too, that will be revealed in the 1969 collection.
I can hardly wait. One of those that we have, I believe it's in 68, is George Carlin.
George Carlin, right, on about three broadcasts, I think.
And George Carlin did a fine job. You think of him, wow, either the hippy-dippy weatherman or he did the seven dirty words. Immensely talented man, and he did a marvelous job hosting Saturday Night Monitor.
No doubt about it. He was one of a kind, and he's sorely missed. He was in his early years as, you know, portrayed on Monitor, and he blossomed from there.
So, George, having put this together now for 4.5 years, what have you relearned about Monitor in terms of its format, in terms of its entertainment value, in terms of its impact? Has anything come back to you that maybe you had forgotten for a while?
Everything I listen to is a new adventure. I mean, music I still had kind of in the back of my mind, and when I hear it again, it's like I remember the melody or the words or what or the commercials. The commercials are a treasure trove too. It's just like the Sitco ads, you know. It's da 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 from 1967. Da 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 da. I remember that like 50 years later. You know, it's a bouncy little melody that just kind of sticks with you.
You know what I remember?
Or the Vic Damone Coppertone ads.
Oh, Coppertone.
Yeah.
Get the fastest tan that anyone can.
Get the fastest tone that anyone can. Tan don't burn, get a Coppertone tan.
Gentlemen, we're just about done after George starts singing. That is it. But the fun part about this for me, and I grew up listening to Monitor, as you did, George, and the host in the 60s, the mid-60s, particularly again in 67, seemed to me perfect for their time slots. Rayburn, for example, Saturday Morning Monitor, for years, the longest tenured Monitor host, perfect for that slot because he was so energetic. He ad-libbed so much. He was so enthusiastic. And that perfectly exemplified what we all felt on Saturday mornings as we started the weekend. He was wonderful for that slot.
Oh, yeah, he was just bouncing off the walls with enthusiasm and just off the top, had the you know, little witticisms and all that. He was great. And the sarcasm of Henry Morgan, you know, he lived up to his demeanor all through his life. You know, he was known back in the 40s when he had his own radio show as Peck's Bad Boy because he'd always bite the hand that fed him as far as his sponsors go and all this stuff. The total iconoclast, and that stayed with him for the rest of his life.
I always thought Saturday afternoons for me, from then to this moment, was Ed McMahon. He was a Saturday afternoon host for 3 years on Monitor from 3 to 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Perfectly exemplified Saturday afternoon for me, and I was thrilled to listen to him because I'm a teenager, and I know he's on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson because my dad lets me watch The Tonight Show on Friday nights. And there's Ed McMahon on Tonight, and there he is live on Saturday afternoon, and he perfectly exemplified Saturday afternoon to me. And then Sunday nights, Frank McGee first, and then we had eventually succeeded by Frank Blair and then Brad Crandall. Serious people, and Sunday night tended to be a very newsy broadcast with serious interviews and Mel Ellen, of course, doing sports.
Yeah, all the sports results were in by Sunday night for the weekend.
Yeah. So I thought Monitor fit the weekend beautifully. I actually patterned my weekends around it. I was really crazy. I would get up early in the morning on the West Coast. Remember, Rayburn showed up at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 to 9. Well, I was up because I wanted to hear him. I wanted to hear this guy do this show. And so I patterned my weekend around McMahon. I washed the car on Saturday afternoon with Ed doing it in the background, doing Monitor, and Saturday night with Henry Morgan, Ted Steele, whoever was hosting it, et cetera. So Monitor was that kind of show. And the hundreds of letters on the website exemplify the love that these people had for this show. It wasn't just one of those things you watched and forgot about. You remembered it, apparently, all your life.
Well, you know, Monitor, Dennis, wasn't just a national broadcast. They also, in New York, did a local version of Monitor, Monitor New York, as they called it, correct?
Yes, yes. But that didn't last very long on WNBC. That was in 68. WNBC was one of those stations that is seeking an identity. It's a network O&O from the get-go. It was WEAF to start it back
right.
in 1902, and then became WRCA and back and forth. But WNBC was probably hindered by the fact that it was owned by NBC because they couldn't figure out whether to make it a local station or really a national station. So it changed formats every 6 months. In fact, you and I have had this running joke when I send you new ads from new formats that they debut and brought. Well, here's the latest new format that's going to work.
Suffering from schizophrenia.
Yeah. But it was clear that Monitor was needed by the network, and it was fabulously successful. It sold it out for many, many years. It generated hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising. It kept the network on the air, and it was actually the big city stations, starting with the O&O. Well, now starting with a non-O&O, owned and operated. When I say O&O, owned and operated means the network owns you. You're not an affiliate.
Right.
And they control.
Well, tell us, Dennis, tell us a little bit about the beginnings of Monitor back in the June of 1955. That was a brainchild of Sylvester Weaver, who also gave the world the Today Show.
And The Tonight Show.
And The Tonight Show.
And Wide Wide World with Dave Garraway, and The Home Show with Arlene Francis and Hugh Downs. Yes.
A very talented man, but go ahead and tell us about the beginnings of Monitor as best as you can recollect.
Well, the beginnings are that network radio was on its deathbed. Every city where television made an incursion, network radio nighttime audiences went away because people no longer wanted to hear Jack Benny or Burns and Allen. They wanted to see them. Even though it was black and white, kinescope often in cities, television was this magic box. So network radio was dying. And here's this guy, Pat Weaver, who is by far the most dynamic, interesting, intelligent programmer likely in the history of broadcasting up to this moment. He comes up with this brainchild. And the brainchild is, we're going to give you this all-weekend show. And it's going to be a kind of Today Show. He'd already created that. But this one would take you everywhere in the world. Television could not take you anywhere live because it didn't have the capability. It didn't have satellites. It didn't have any way to get you live. Monitor could get you there by phoning, by having somebody phone in. So he comes up with this audacious idea of this 40-hour continuous broadcast, 40 straight hours. Big-name hosts, big-name stars. It has everything. And he sells it to the media, and they love everything Weaver does. He always got great publicity because he was great copy, as they say. And he holds the news conference, April 1st, April 15th, right around there, where he unveils this idea to the New York press, these gnarly, these tough, cynical press people, and he talks about Monitor and what it's going to do, and somebody yells out, "Can you just tell us what it is in a couple of words?" And he comes up with this thing called, and he says, "Yes, it's a kaleidoscopic phantasmagoria." Everybody buys into it. The next day in the New York Times, the kaleidoscopic phantasmagoria of Pat Weaver. Everybody buys into this. So he creates this superheated activity of excitement before Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m., June 12, 1955. And that's when Monitor is going to debut. They've hired 150 people in at NBC Radio to put this thing on the air. Producers, writers, editors, hosts, anything. They had people all around the country putting stuff into Monitor, from affiliate stations, O&O stations. And he has this brilliant idea, because Pat Weaver was brilliant. He says, "I'm going to televise the first hour of this thing from 4 to 5 o'clock Eastern Time. It's going to be on NBC TV and radio." So think about this. They're televising a radio show. Now it's common. Sports talk, you can see on Fox Sports 1. You can hear it on the radio network. You can do, but back then, that didn't happen. So why did he do that? Because he wanted to show the NBC TV audience that radio still existed and still counted. So that first hour, with Dave Garraway as the driver of this, and Dave Garraway was very important to the life of Monitor because he'd already made a big name for himself as the brilliant host of Today for the past 3 years. So Garraway drives this thing, and they go everywhere in that first hour. I mean, they're doing remotes from here, and they're doing remotes from there, audio remotes, et cetera, et cetera, and it's being televised. Bob and Ray are there. That's another great thought, a great idea of Pat Weaver's. We're going to have these great comedians, Bob and Ray, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, at Monitor and Radio Central all weekend long, so that if anything goes wrong on a remote switch or if a tape breaks, they can be there and ad-lib a routine. You say, well, now, wait a minute. How could they possibly do that, come up with something immediately? They were that brilliant, and they won a Peabody Award for it. That's how good they were. So the first hour, the first day of Monitor goes 8 hours, 4 p.m. to 12 p.m. Remember, network radio is on its deathbed. The weekend before Monitor goes on the air, the NBC radio network has exactly 2 commercial spots the entire weekend that Monitor goes on, before Monitor goes on the air. Monitor goes on the air with 40 hours the following weekend, June 18th and 19th, 70% sold out, hundreds of thousands of dollars. By July 4th, 97% sold out. They're selling everything. Monitor is a gigantic hit. And suddenly, Monitor not only is this commercial hit, which advertisers obviously want, it starts showing up in the Nielsen ratings almost immediately. And Nielsen had a very difficult time handling auto ratings. How could they figure out who was listening in a car? You didn't have books in their car, Nielsen ratings book. They didn't really know how to measure that. Within a month after Monitor was on the air, on Saturday and Sunday afternoons in drive time, Monitor was number one or number two or number three in major markets across the country because people started hearing there's this show on the air, this show that you got to listen to, at least give it a shot. And they did, and people loved it. So Monitor became a gigantic commercial and audience hit. That's all you can say about it. It single-handedly pulled the NBC radio network from years of red ink to years of black ink. And the other radio networks were caught flat-footed. In fact, story I like to tell, George, you remember I've told this probably a dozen times, is that CBS Radio, in their radio affiliates convention that year in September, Monitor had been on the air for 3 or 4 months. Their entire convention was devoted to trying to trash Monitor. They didn't have anything to talk about on what they were doing. It was all about, well, who's going to listen to something with boops and beeps and bites and all that? Everybody. So that's how Monitor got going. It was a spot of his inspiration, Weaver's inspiration, out of pure desperation. Network radio was that bad off.
Here's another fastball for you. I know the answer to this, but I want you to explain it from your own reminiscence. The Monitor beacon, you know, the tones. How did that come about?
You know, I wish you wouldn't ask me that. Doggone it.
You know the answer. Come on. Don't hold back.
It's part of it is the phone company.
Yes. There you go. That's it.
long-distance tones they put up on the line. They superimposed a Morse code over the top of it. They ran it at high speed and backwards, and they came up with this boop, 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 boop thing to start every hour or every half hour of monitor. Story about that, George, is that when Pat Weaver took it into General Sarnoff, David Sarnoff, who was the big honcho at RCA, which owned NBC, the general, oh, he hated that.
He hated it, yes.
God, he hated it. And he said, I don't like that. And, you know, General Sarnoff always this imperious guy. And Pat Weaver, who would never back down from the general, and that's why he probably left NBC far too early, because he wouldn't back down. He said, and Pat told me this when I interviewed him for my master's thesis about monitor. Pat said, I said, General, we didn't create this sound for you. We created it for the audience. And they're going to love it. And doggone it, the audience loved it. The most distinctive sound in radio. You know, we always had these strange sounds coming in. The what was it, Lights Out, that had the creaking door? Was that Lights Out?
Inner Sanctum.
Inner Sanctum.
Door, okay. And, of course, you had the closet from Fibber McGee and Molly. That
right.
Came on
Jack Benny's vault.
Always. But the monitor beacon. If you tell somebody who's 50 or 60 years old, do you remember what the monitor beacon sounded like? They might not be able to boop, 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 but they know what it sounds like. It became the most distinctive sound at all radio. You got another one? You got another hardball for me?
Like Jack Benny said, I'm thinking it over. How did they get the news broadcasts up so fast before the satellite invention? We had, you know, Telstar was the first satellite that went up in 1962. How did they get the news reports overseas to the U.S., for example, so quickly? I mean, were probably still using shortwave at that point, but, I mean, the broadcast quality is so much better than shortwave.
Well, yeah, but remember this, that NBC had bureaus all over the world. They had more bureaus back then than they do now around the world. And so they had put out the memos, and I've seen the memos, to all of their overseas correspondents and said, look, this is a new way of doing business. You're going to have to be available all weekend long, and it may be inconvenient to you. But he said, the memo said, that Jim Fleming wrote, he became the first executive producer of Monitor, he said, this is a new way of thinking. The way it is, we're not going to call it a newscast, it's going to be an information report, and you're going to have to fill some material. Anything going on in your area, we want to know about it. You can teletype us. You can do whatever it takes. We're going to get this on the air. And NBC, again, had dozens of bureaus around the world. Around the country, they had owned and operated stations in major cities, New York, Chicago, Washington, San Francisco, where their O&O stations had direct lines into the network. All they had to do was reverse the lines to get in a network audio quality, a network quality report from one of their O&Os, or the telephone. A telephone report worked just fine here in the United States. I'm not sure when the transatlantic phone cable was laid. Anybody know that?
Oh, that was the 1850s.
The transatlantic phone cable?
Yes.
Wow, well, we didn't have
transatlantic. No, it was for telegraph, but it got adapted into a telephone later on.
Yeah. Anyway, so they got him in. The whole point was they had writers, each segment of Monitor, 3 or 4 hour segment, had its own crew of people, its own producers, directors, writers, production assistants, editors, hosts, and anytime anything came in that was a breaking news story, the writer would immediately take it off the wire or wherever it came from, start putting it out. You know, it's a hand-type situation. You have to distribute 4 or 5 copies to the host, the director, the producer, you know, whoever, the audio person. But that was the whole point of Monitor. Monitor was going to keep you in instantaneous touch with what was going on in the world. In fact, coming into the board at Radio Central, this giant studio they built on the 5th floor of the RCA building, they had 24 audio lines coming in from around the world. They could put them all up at once if they had to.
Was it all telephonic? It was telephone lines?
Telephone lines, yes. Mm-hmm. And they could just punch it up and bring it in. Of course, they monitored their own television network, but TV was so far behind radio on covering things. TV couldn't do anything live. It was nothing. It was you just couldn't get out of the building. So that was what made Monitor so impressive. You were listening there, and you knew that if anything major broke in the weekend, and we have so many examples of this on the website, so many, if anything broke, you were there. You were going to be there. Now, we just had an example put up the other day of Ed McMahon hosting Saturday Afternoon Monitor. Oh, yeah, the British devalued the pound. You remember that hour that you sent us?
I sure do, yes.
So here's one of the Monitor, one of the NBC News people interviewing Irving R. Levine live in London, And then as soon as that ends and McMahon is live on the air, he reads a bulletin that somebody's just handed him about a plane landing, a crippled airplane that held, I believe, the governor of North Dakota and his wife. And it was circling around an Air Force base crippled, and it landed safely. And McMahon reads this the second this other live thing gets off from London. And you're thinking, as I did, my God, you're on top of the world. You guys noticed.
Yeah, we just put that broadcast up just last week.
Yeah, it's there. It's you can easily detect where it is on the website. So we've identified them in different colors and all of this. That was what excited me most about Monitor. And I know we keep going on and saying this year after year, but maybe we have new listeners. We hope we have new listeners out there on USA yesterday. But Monitor kept you in touch. It wasn't boring, though. I don't want to cast any aspersions because I do a good job. But you know where I'm going with this, George. This is not your mother's NPR.
No.
Okay? This is not reading so slowly.
No, that is boring, yes. No, this kept it moving. If you got bored for 5 minutes, just wait 5 minutes and you would be unbored because it was such a mix of different things for different people that you couldn't stay bored for long if you happened to get bored.
No, this was energetic. It was important. Yes, it was entertaining. Tremendous entertainment value in Monitor or nobody would have listened.
And for the most part, it reflected the music, not at all times, but for the most part, it reflected the music trends of the time, the mainstream music, not necessarily rock and roll or anything, but kind of like your parents' kind of music, kind of middle-of-the-road stuff, you know.
And eventually music became a serious problem for Monitor because you could never please all 200-plus NBC Radio Network affiliates. Some were country western, not many, but some like WSM in Nashville. Some were traditional. Some may have been big band. And here's Monitor coming up. And in the early years, it was traditional big band stuff. And
yes, the big bands, especially on New Year's Eve, they always devoted all the resources to overnight for hours, for maybe about five solid hours, just all the existing old-style big bands that were still in existence for New Year's Eve.
But in 1967, after Steve Lubunsky had become president of the NBC Radio Network, he spearheaded a real, not formatic change, but an updating in Monitor. And you know this, George, they started using really catchy jingles, and I liked that a lot. They updated the music format, so you were hearing not just Sinatra and Bennett and Streisand, but you're hearing Steve and Edie, who are really doing some really good stuff back then. You're hearing Petula Clark. You're hearing Vicky Carr. Really a good musical sound.
Spanky and Our Gang, you know, some of the more current things at the time with, you know, nice melodies, that kind of stuff.
You almost got me singing about Spanky and Our Gang, and you don't want to do that.
We have the time. Go ahead.
No. I want to read a quick letter from Don Spuler, and then we'll get right back.
Please do, yes.
He said from Los Angeles, again, Don is listening to us out in Los Angeles. He's been one of the most loyal Monitor fans on the website, maybe the first person to write a letter, an email to us. I think you were, Don. Tell me if you were. Anyway, he writes just a minute ago, I liked Gene Rayburn, but KFI, the NBC non-owned and operated station in Los Angeles, did not carry Saturday Morning Monitor except 1 hour at 11 a.m., they ran local programming. If I wanted to listen to 3 full hours of Rayburn live, I had to try to listen to KOGO in San Diego. A Saturday Afternoon Monitor on KFI during baseball season was preempted many Saturdays because of Dodger broadcasts, yes. And KFI was 50,000 watts at 640, a giant, giant, giant signal. But one of the problems NBC had, George, they could never buy it from Earl C. Anthony. He would never sell it. And therefore, if you did not own that station, you could not guarantee clearance of Monitor.
Mm.
So that was a problem. And Don told me just a few weeks ago that the last time KFI cleared Monitor in its entirety was the 12th anniversary show that night in 1967, June 10th and 11th, 1967.
Right. It was sponsored by DuPont the whole weekend.
All weekend long.
With Bob and Ray commercials.
the biggest single buy in the history of network radio. They bought every commercial on Monitor, and NBC induced KFI to clear it because you had to have LA. You just had to have LA. But then they went their own way, and that was really the beginning of the hemorrhage, where some big city stations said, look, we want to do our own local disc jockeys and keep all the commercial money for ourselves when we sell our local spots, because the compensation from NBC was not great. When you cleared a spot, if you were a local affiliate, you didn't get a lot of money for it from the network, but you got some. So that was the beginning of a hemorrhage. But up to that point, Monitor in 67, and I think that was the high point of Monitor 12 years in, with those hosts, those contributors, those sponsors, fully loaded on Saturday morning, fully loaded for, well, they'd be fully loaded on Saturday mornings until the end. But that was the high point. After that, it was a slow decline, and then in the 70s, it became an avalanche of a decline, and that eventually led to the end.
Well, it was like anything else in life. It was like a bell curve, a slow rise up, and it peaks at some point, and then it's a slow, steady decline, just as fast as the ascent was.
Yeah. And so in order to bring this full circle, Monitor was this tremendous commercial and artistic and audience success for all those years. And then in the 70s, when stations began not putting it on the air, and they call that not clearing. When they did not put it on the air, well, then, of course, advertisers started saying, well, I don't want to pay that kind of money if we're not going to be heard in Los Angeles, for heaven's sakes. So we want to cut what we're paying. Well, that obviously would harm the bottom line for NBC Radio. So NBC came up with an idea in 1970, December of 70. It was called Custom Monitor. And this was a pre-feed on Wednesday and Thursday nights where the network would feed to its affiliates, number one, all of the commercial inventory that was going to be aired on Monitor that weekend, commercials first, then the sponsored features. And by that I mean Joe Garagiola was always sponsored, Dr. Joyce Brothers, Hugh Downs, Arlene Francis. You would feed those down the line. They'd already been taped with the commercials inserted. You'd send that to the affiliates. Then you'd do non-sponsored material that the stations could air. And they were begging the stations, if you're not going to clear the full Monitor, please clear this. We've got to get commercial clearance. And immediately, KNBR in San Francisco, which was the owned and operated station by NBC, that first weekend, put on Custom Monitor instead of Monitor. Now, I remember it because I was driving to Fresno State, where I was a student, to the library that morning, and I always tuned over to KNBR before I got to the library to hear the last part of Rayburn, and I didn't hear Rayburn. I heard a Bob Hope comedy routine feature sponsored, but that was it. And that was the first I ever heard of Custom Monitor. So KNBR would clear Custom Monitor, but not the entire show. They put the spots on, the commercials. Same with WNBC, same with WRC in Washington, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, depending upon who I talked to when I did the books, that either some executive said that saved Monitor for another 5 years because it kept it on the air, at least the commercials and some of the features. Others said it killed Monitor because it allowed big market stations to pull away from the full feed so that you did not hear Gene Rayburn or whoever, or Bill Cullen hosting Saturday afternoon or Murray the K on Saturday night. I don't know, George. I think it was a decision the network probably felt they had to make, obviously. I would have attempted the updating of Monitor, the full Monitor, earlier. They, as you know, they tried in 1973 to bring in new hosts, a new format, basically, very fast-paced. Big Wilson, John Bartholomew Tucker hosted Monitor at that point, disc jockeys, and they were good. But it wasn't the same Monitor. It wasn't the same.
It was too late. It was a different audience. It was a different time. Radio was evolving, you know. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if I can put in a plug for my friend Dennis Hart here. He's written two Monitor books. One was the original, and one's the updated book. It's called Monitor, The Ultimate Radio Show, I believe. Is that the correct title?
No, George, but thanks for the
Give us the correct title. Come on, it's still available. I've got both editions. It's a great read, folks. So I turn it over to you. What's the correct name of the book, Dennis?
Well, the second book is The Monitor.
It's updated.
Right. It was written 16 or 18 months after the first book because mm-hmm. the first book generated so much response from Monitor people I had not been able to reach. They contacted me through the website or through their friends, and I just had to rewrite the book because it's so much better than the first book, which is Monitor, the Last Great Radio Show. That's the first book.
Right. I almost this got one, it right.
No, you were close. You were very, very close. And by the way, I'm going to do a quick diversion here, not very long. Not very long, because I can talk fast, as you
can see.
One of our favorite Monitor supporters here, has been for years on the website, is a journalism and mass communication teacher at Newberry College in South Carolina named Jody Peeler.
Great.
Jody Peeler has just published the definitive book on Dave Garraway, one of the first and greatest Monitor hosts and the legendary first host of today. I have the book. It is magnificent. And, of course, Monitor is mentioned throughout because that's a big part of his life, right? Monitor.
Yes, correct.
But Jody Peeler has put together the book that I've been waiting for, and I'm surprised nobody ever wrote. She's written it. It's magnificent. I highly recommend it. P-E-E-L-E-R, Jody Peeler. The book is called Peace. And I bet you know why, George.
He signed off that way.
He put up his hand at the end of every Today show and said, Peace.
Peace.
That's exactly right. Peace. P-E-A-C-E is the name of the book. It's a magnificent book. Jody, I hope you're listening. I gave you a plug there. And also, the information on getting the book is on the front of the website, the Monitor Beacon website. So anyway.
Well, maybe you want to put her in touch with me. I'd like to have her on a show. So just throw that way for me, Dennis. I wouldn't mind having her on. So
I would love that to be the case. In fact, I told her that we were going to be on the program tonight. And she said, yeah, you guys don't want to listen to me. And I said, well, sure we do. Of course we do. So she's very shy. She's brilliant. And I highly recommend her. I will tell her you'd like her on the show.
Yeah. Jordy, if you're out there, our ears are open. Please call in.
As our ears are open for anybody else across the nation. Like, what's that phone number again? What's that number?
714-545-2071. Don't worry, everybody. I got questions Dennis and Joyce never heard. I'll be pulling those out soon. 714-545-2071.
Oh, no, George. He's going to quiz us again. Oh.
I'm waiting for my friend Louis Castain to call in one of these minutes here. So come on, Louis. Come on. Louis, let's go.
I think Louis is very sharp.
I want to pick your brain. You know a lot of stuff, too, about Monitor.
Hey, listen, I just want to emphasize one more note before you start asking questions, is that in the mid-1960s, virtually all of network radio other than NBC had gone away. ABC radio was nothing, and they were on their way in 68 to breaking apart their
network. Broke about four or five different ways, different networks, the entertainment, the news, you know, the entertainment, information.
They gave up long-form programming for these 5-minute or 3-minute newscasts at different times to different affiliates. And the beauty of that was, for them, that they could get more affiliates because you could only affiliate if you were a radio station with one of those networks, but you could have four ABC affiliates in the same market.
Right.
I understand that in the first couple of years they lost millions of dollars on that deal, but it was their way of trying to survive. PBS still had Godfrey. And they had a few short...
Well, ABC had shown Don McNeil in the Breakfast Club the door at that point back in 1968. Yeah. December of 68 was his last broadcast. But Godfrey hung on to with CBS till May of 1972.
Yes, that's exactly right. And Mutual, of course, was still doing its newscasts out of phone booths.
Yeah, right. Yeah. One of the oldest broadcast networks reduced to a phone booth.
Yeah, that's a legendary story, by the way. They had no money. They were owned by bottom feeders.
Well, back in the 1940s, out of the three broadcast networks, supposedly, they claimed, I don't know if it's true or not, but they supposedly were the largest radio network.
Oh, sure they were, because they were in all small markets in the country, a lot of small markets.
Oh, okay, that makes it, you know, just for, you know, affiliates, I guess, but not as far as revenue necessarily.
No, because a lot of small stations would take Mutual. I mean, they were a weak-sounding network, really weak.
Right.
Actually, it tells you how bad Mutual biggest, there's a good trivia question for you, too. What would what show with the biggest revenue source for Mutual in the 40s?
The Shadow?
Nope.
The Lone Ranger?
Nope.
I don't know.
What style show? Comedy, drama, what was it? News?
A religion. Religious broadcast.
What was it?
Religion.
A religion broadcast.
Religious broadcast.
25% of all their income.
Oh, my God. I have no idea.
The old-fashioned revival hour was the biggest billing thing for the Mutual.
Well, I was right about that. I would have never guessed in a million years.
Yeah.
That had a bigger audience than The Shadow?
Well, it's where they made their money.
I guess.
You know.
Give me that old-time religion, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that kept Mutual afloat.
Wow.
Well, Mutual was always this strange network. It was owned by its stations. Four stations started it. It was never fully, you know, capitalized. And its biggest problem after the war was, of course, it had no television network.
Yeah.
Money. And so NBC was feeding the profits from its radio networks into TV, as was CBS. ABC had just been created out of the Blue Network. NBC was forced to divest one of its two networks.
Yeah, back in 1943, 44, something like that, yeah.
The FCC said you cannot broadcast two programs from one network simultaneously in the market. And NBC had the Red, and they had the Blue Network, so the Blue went to ABC. And it was always the one that had lesser ratings than NBC's Red Network.
Right.
So Mutual actually had an advantage in the early 1950s. And this is an interesting thing, because as television came into cities across the country, and remember that by 1953, only one-third of the nation had television. Two-thirds had never seen television, didn't know what it was. Okay. But television always came into the bigger markets first. New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Washington. Never into the small markets in the burgs, right, or in the burgs, wherever you want to call it, in Alabama, Mississippi, Illinois. So Mutual had all these stations out there. So they actually started taking out ads and broadcasting. And Walden, I know you've seen these. Maybe you have. Hey, we still have an audience here. As the other networks are losing their audience, we've still got one. And the reason they had them is because there was no TV in those markets. Those small stations still had their exclusivity for radio, if you will.
Well, it's interesting. I had Ira Fistel on, who was an all-night talk show host on the ABC network in the 80s, and he was telling me two factors. One, I knew that, say, Mutual was one thing with Notre Dame football, and because stations wanted Notre Dame football, they had to carry Larry King. So, in a way, that's probably why Larry King thinks his national prominence to Notre Dame football. And two, Mutual gave all their satellite equipment to the station for free because ABC did not. They charged the local affiliate for the satellite equipment to pick up the feed. So it was two different models that was going there in the 70s and 80s, too.
You mentioned Larry King. We have him as a monitor reporter.
Yes, on a few broadcasts.
Yes. And you mentioned Larry also, Walden. As you know, Larry King's show devolved out of this thing called the Nightcap Show with Herb Jepko.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Cell in Salt Lake City, Utah, midnight to 6 or so. And I remember listening to Herb Jepko when I was growing up because KSL booms in here.
Yep.
1,000 big ones. And he was a great show host, but he wasn't a network guy. He was more of a local guy. And he ran a very homey show called the Nightcap Show. It was a wonderful show, I thought.